Slapping that mother.
Psycho killer.
I got it.
Guess what to say?
I got the book.
That's crazy. How many pages is it? It looks kind of thick. What
too
the fuck?
Fucking many. Yeah, and like, can you believe that the Amazon people like bent it up?
They fucked it up when it was going in the box.
Yeah. I can't
that's good,
believe
good. That. Is it like AI art? It's gotta be, right?
It looks like AI art. I'm assuming it's AI art.
Does it have like an illustrated by?
It does not. And listeners, we will be getting into this, but I got us a book that I'm gonna be reading on the podcast.
Have you read it?
No, I flipped through it, but I have not read it.
Okay. I don't know if I can describe what he's holding in his hand.
We'll get to it, listeners. We'll get to it.
Yes.
Hey, Propagandos. It's Tuesday, July 8th, 7:58 p.m.
What up?
It's your boy, Connor C. By the way, I'm thinking about doing a last name reveal. Because who are we kidding?
And that last name reveal? Let's go.
It is so fucking easy to find out who we are.
Connor John Johnson.
Yeah, Connor Johnson.
A radical Islamic communist from Houston, Texas.
That's me. I have taken the Shahada and have converted to extremism.
Extremism, Mamdanism.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I am I follow Mufti Mamdani. Peace be upon him.
Oh my God, our imam, our great imam.
They call him the great imam.
Did you? So I don't know if have you seen the clips of him talking in Iowa when he's like, "We're not gonna let even a city like New York fall to Islamic communism," and it's like. It does actually make me nervous when he says shit like that because I'm like, are they just going to like blackbag this mayoral candidate? Like,
they might. I don't know. They might. They might just like denaturalize him and deport him.
Jesus, man. Fuck.
Yeah, I don't.
Oh, it's maddening.
I don't want to make a prediction and end up being wrong. So we'll.
Not unreasonable there, Connor. Yeah.
So we'll just be quiet for now and say good luck to you, Zoran.
Good luck, Zoran. We're crossing our fingers for you, buddy.
I can't wait for you to become governor of Texas, right? That's what he's running for?
Yeah. Wherever. This is a Gulf Coast podcast.
If you look at my social media feed and all my Houston friends who couldn't bother to pay attention to Houston City Council, they're all posting about Zoran.
Yeah, that is one of the pains in the ass is like a bunch of people who, yeah, absolutely have nothing to do with like local politics all being like, hooray. It's like, you know, you could do this too, right? Like, we could at least attempt to fucking do it.
Miss me with that shit, man.
I'm playing Death Stranding too, actually. It's, so
it's up there with like boycotting and team in terms of like, not to say that boycotting is useless, but it's like literally the least you could do is like support a candidate that you can't vote for.
Yeah. It's getting the other option on the menu when you go to like, you know, Wendy's or whatever. Like, I just don't get the Israeli tomatoes. It's like, whatever you say, brother.
They're slavery tomatoes. They're
slavery tomatoes.
At Wendy's, their tomatoes are picked with slave labor, so I get no tomatoes.
I don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
Like, I know people are mad at Wendy's, but...
So we got a few things on the docket today, my man.
We do.
We read a book. Well, I read a book. Did you finish the book?
No, I have not. I've been meaning to talk to you about this. I'm about a third of the way through. And folks, we're talking about Ezra Klein and Derek Thompson's Abundance, which Connor graciously provided me a copy of. And would you believe it? I get to listening to it on 1.5 times speed. And every 20 minutes, I have to put it down because I'm about to have a fucking coronary. It's pissing me off so bad.
Well, Alec, I'm happy to say that your impatience is only like a disservice to you, right? So I finished the book. I finished the book, and
I'm glad.
Are you ready to hear the big solutions that they offer?
Yes, I am. I can't wait.
We've tried nothing, and we're all out of ideas.
That's what I fucking figured, man.
The whole time, yeah. I was like, "Where are your solutions? Where are your solutions?" Oh. And they're just like, "Government should be better." Okay.
we all don't like the government now, but what if it was good? It's like, you motherfucker, how are we going to do that?
So we decided to read this book because I have a tendency to get really frustrated when I'm just being given like a lens of something that's being talked about. So instead of reading Abundance, I'm just hearing someone comment on Abundance or someone reply to someone's comment on Abundance on Twitter or hear a podcaster like talk about why Abundance is bad. Like, you're not really saying anything that's relevant to me. So let me go read the book. And it turns out I shouldn't have done that.
I shouldn't have trusted the talking heads. Well, no, I mean, because I think, Connor, you called me. We were talking a while back and you like called me out and you're like, have you read the thing? And I'm like, fuck no, dude. And you're like, you fucking pussy. go read a book for once. Right.
Yeah, and we should have read something
you
else.
You are correct, because now I can name a dozen different ways just in the first third of the book that it is extremely fucking stupid, right? Like, Connor, will you enlighten us, please, on there's a homeless crisis in San Francisco. I don't know if you've heard.
Right? I have.
And some people have posited that this might be because San Francisco has warm winters, right? And homeless people like to stay in San Francisco for that reason. But Houston is also a city that has warm winters, and it doesn't have nearly as many homeless people. And Ezra Klein is flummoxed by this. Could this be because of the abundance of housing in Houston?
No. look, I in the past 24 hours, I did try to find somebody that's like a Houston homelessness expert to kind of speak to what Klein and Thompson are proposing. But their belief is that the reason why we have so few homeless people is because we have no zoning laws and therefore we can build more houses. And I don't know if I agree with their assessment on that. a big thing in Abundance, a through line, is that we have too much government regulation, which there are some examples they cite that are true. And there are some examples that they cite that are, you know, they're conveniently leaving out some context. So I can tell you, reading the chapters that's about like Houston has no zoning laws, therefore they can build more houses, therefore they have no homelessness. This is good. And two things came to mind. One, we don't have a lot of homeless people around because we just regularly like ship them out of sight.
Literally like put them on buses and send them somewhere else.
Yeah. There's a lot of like destruction of their tent cities, destruction of their property, chasing them out. Mayor Turner, the previous mayor, not our current Chrome Dome Kojak dipshit mayor, John Whitmire, but Sylvester Turner, rest in peace. He did approve some initiative to create like homeless housing for the homeless people. And it got a lot of homeless people off the street. And within like 2 months, the homeless that are now housed, they were like, hey, these houses are full of mold and rats and bugs.
Yeah. These are shoe boxes that you've constructed for us to live in.
Yeah. So we do have a place called the Ion, which is just like a startup accelerator that was created back when Obama era techno optimism was like, startups are good, ZERPs are good. And now it's just like a building that can't get a fucking tenant in there.
We're all bouncing around on yoga balls in here and doing code.
Yeah. Yeah. And in order to get that, as well as this place called Greentown Labs off the ground, which is directly across the street from the Ion, they had to usher out like every homeless person in that area. And it's near like a halfway house. It's near like a services to get homeless people jobs. And what's really frustrating is that Greenhouse Labs, what used to be there, was a fucking grocery store. So in the process of building this like startup tech incubator, not Woo! Only did they usher out all the homeless, but they turned this part of town, it's effectively into a food desert. So complete asinine stuff throughout our attempts to alleviate homelessness. Now, the other thing I wanted to touch on, which is the zoning laws. Living in Houston, living in a city with no zoning laws, I'm over here just sitting like, zoning law, please. Please, please, zoning law, please.
Please help me.
you know this, Alec. I used to live in like kind of a heavily wooded part of the city. Like,
yes, you did.
A weird pocket of the city. And it was surrounded by a steel yard. So you'd walk out and it's like, oh, cool, this Montessori school, like all the students are just breathing in like rust because the steel yard just has like orange particles flying through the neighborhood. We need some zoning laws in Houston.
But Connor, where are we going to build the high-rise, low-income apartments that that developers are just dying to build, except that there's too many fire escapes and, you know, plumbing code? Like, I haven't gotten to the bit where Ezra's complaining about specific...
We can also get into plumbing code stuff, because I can tell you this. My fiance, when she moved into my place, we talked about living in her neighborhood, which is Montrose, and she lived in Montrose for a really long time. But... a bunch of huge apartment complexes went up. And I mean, like, hundreds upon hundreds of units that these massive apartment complexes take up, like, a whole block, right? And they did not redo the plumbing infrastructure of the neighborhood. So all of a sudden, if I used her bathroom, which, trust me, I'm blowing that bitch up. if I'm using her bathroom, it did take me, like, several times to flush. And even for number ones, it took me like several times to flush to get everything out of there. And it was because just like one pipe going down the street into this like apartment complex with hundreds of units. And it also, like, you know, logged up all the parking on the street. It made it impossible to get around. Like, these zoning laws, the lack of zoning laws create real problems, which is part of my overall criticism of the Book Abundance, which is you bring a lot of quantitative examples when pitching that, like, some deregulation is good, but you provide zero qualitative contextual analysis. You provide zero historical analysis. You don't say anything about, like, things are bad. It's like, okay, why are they bad? And in certain cases, such as the housing crisis, was too much regulation a problem? Did the global meltdown happen because we regulated things too much? No, you fucking morons.
It's just, it's all very shallow. I mean, the good news is, I think we talked about this as we were going through it, is that we're arriving finally at critiquing abundance at a time where it is essentially no longer relevant. Yeah. It's either been laughed at enough, or the kind of, you know, collective orgasm of all these fucking deregulatory, you know, liberals has cooled to the extent that, like, they don't even really bring it up that much. but it's really fascinating, I think, to me. You know, we're, again, a propaganda podcast, and you better believe that this is attempting to be a piece of propaganda.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And creating something this shallow that probably will on some level affect, like, public policy. I believe, right, that in the next couple of years, we will see somebody rise to maybe federal office, right? Like a John Ossoff type, I'm imagining, that is going to, like, cite abundance. And the fact that this is what we're doing in terms of, like, our internal propaganda to each other, right, on the ostensible left or whatever, that is so contextless, right? That doesn't talk about, you know, fundamental issues of American structure and a lack of city planning. I mean, that's what I see ultimately, right? Is that we're drawing on these very surface level analyses of some kind of metrics with essentially no context comparing, you know, apples to oranges as far as, like, San Francisco to Austin and San Francisco to Houston. And it makes no sense given, like, the history of the cities that we're comparing, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
And then we're just not going to talk about the fact that the United States as a whole just does not have a federalized urban planning structure. We barely did in the last century, and we definitely don't now. Right. And the municipalities are just fundamentally limited in their scope. And we don't have the kind of a federalized infrastructure that's connected to the money that could effectively build housing or any other kind of government structure. Right. Like, I know that he's going to, I literally haven't read to that point because
you don't have to read it anymore. I told you how it ended.
I probably will finish it or try to. Like, I haven't gotten to the part where he talks about the California, like, high-speed rail fiasco. But one of the issues is that, you know, the lots of people can do eminent domain, but nobody can do it like the feds, right? Nobody can, and lots of people can raise money, but nobody can do it like the feds. And this is all sidestepping the issue that the feds could literally step in and build affordable housing through state means, right? Through, yeah, a state structure. That is what America needs desperately, right? Is somebody connected to the motherfucking money printer to come in and build relatively small apartments that are decently built, right, in mass, using eminent domain to take fucking plots in large municipalities away from people that are sitting on them, finance that, and then just put them out on the market below fucking rate. Just have people move into them en masse. We won't do this, right? Right. And the reasons why we won't do this are the kind of thing that would make for an interesting book. But Ezra Klein is like, this is an airport fucking book, right? This is a John Ossoff book.
This is a book for your freshman or sophomore political science major who is looking for like an actual field to become an expert in. And I think Abundance will serve as a good tipping off point for them to dive into like actual historical context, actual expertise, and actual policy proposals that aren't just like, you know, we should have more stuff. We should have more stuff.
You know, Marx is famous for wanting more stuff.
Oh my God. Yeah, the passage on Marx. I'm like, what are you doing here? And they put it right at the end to be like, and this ought to shut up Chapo Trap House.
And you don't have to be and you don't have to be a communist to agree with Marx. It's like, I like in the broadest sense, that is true. Like, Marx does want the proletariat to have stuff, but it's like, it's one of those where it's like such an oversimplification that it basically means nothing. Mm-hmm. It's just like, why did you put this in here?
Well, what's so interesting is that nearly every single problem they present in this book could be solved by nationalizing this industry and providing a universal basic income.
Yep, it sure could. I mean, yeah, they glaze over the fact that housing is like an investment, because right, the most important parts I think are about housing, because that's what guys like Ezra Klein actually give a fuck about. And they glaze over the fact that one of the big collapses that coincides with a rise in housing prices and the unaffordability of housing, right, which is, by the way, a self-perpetuating loop, right, is the decoupling of production and real wages, right? He's like, well, they don't go down, but the price of housing just keeps going up. And it's like, did you check the price of other things? Because the price of other, like education and healthcare, also grow up astronomically. Yeah. Yeah,
they do mention like the skyrocketing price of college admissions, which I'm glad they pointed that out. Again, no solution, no ideas on like, they're very, very good. They're very like observant on the problems. They just have nothing on the solution.
They can't even really explain the problems, though.
No, because to explain the problems would like kind of run up against their worldview.
I think
Some of the things that they talk about. So this was something that was really interesting. Two little points. One, they do spend like an entire chapter talking about the need for climate change and clean energy, right? Sure. Okay. Mm-hmm. I can get on board. That sounds great. And then the next chapter is like about how we should deregulate science and how like we should definitely like it's interesting. They talk about they kind of praise Elon Musk and they praise AI, which an astute listener to this podcast will know I have defended AI in the past. I will not deny it's a strain on the environment. Strain being a very loose.
Connor's counterposing himself to me, who wants to kill everyone involved in AI.
Yeah, you violent Luddite. but while they do acknowledge that AI takes up a lot of energy and has like an insane energy demand, they say that so the government needs to step it up with providing energy instead of saying like, so they should slow down and regulate.
We need to build more power plants for these fucking these anime pornography copying image machines.
Right. And they don't even like they kind of sort of touch on like nuclear being like a viable power option, but they don't go into it much about like how it's actually cleaner than crude oil, how what, you're rolling your eyes?
Well, no. And the interest that lobbied to stop us from building more nuclear, you fucks.
Yeah. They don't really go into that. They do talk about Reagan nominating a dentist to be Secretary of Energy and just like putting a kibosh on any and all investment into solar power. It's just like, yeah, that fucking sucks. Like, thanks for
pointing
that
thing out. That's over and we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, no, our new president just loves alternative energy resources, including wind turbines.
Yeah. So I will say, Connor, and you will notice this someday, I promise this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And you're going to be glad you read Abundance, because I promise someday you're going to be having some conversation with somebody you don't really know yet, and they're going to bring up that they loved Abundance.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to safely be able to roll your eyes internally and say, this guy's a fucking moron.
Yeah, I can anticipate that. I was telling my brother, Nathan, you know, Nathan and I were also, he's also reading it, so we were like, I was texting you and him, and we're all three of us are like, this sucks.
The angry.
Yeah. But I'm glad I read it, because this is liberalism, like, crystallized.
Yeah,
This is the contemporary liberal mode of thinking. This is what is being praised as gospel in liberal circles that I admittedly do not run in. I'm glad to know what they're thinking. I'm glad I read it instead of listening to the pundits, because I am truly sick of cynical takedowns, and I truly want an authentic alternative.
That's fair. It's fair. You are correct, right? Like, if we are critical of nobody fucking reading the articles, right? The ones that we roll our eyes at, right? And I do read a lot of fucking articles, but a lot of them, I'll look at the headline and I will roll my eyes and I'm not reading that shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could make the excuse that it's time, but it's mostly interest, right? Like, I'd rather get through on Twitter, read my news, and then, you know, play my round of Dune Imperium before I go to bed.
Hey, don't blame me there, man. One other thing that was in this book that was really, they talk about immigration and how we should make it easier for immigrants to come here, specifically scientists. Because scientists should come to America to invent things and, like, deal with no regulations. And we really had a really strong history of bringing scientists to America, which they kind of gloss over after World War II and then
Germans.
Get back to in, like, the 80s. Yeah. One thing that, like, I kept realizing as I was reading this book is, you don't want a world of abundance. You want American exceptionalism abundance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. I think that becomes well, I mean, like, to be honest, right, these guys are talking about national housing policy, right? Like, so I can forgive them that. But absolutely, right? Like, they don't mind brain drain in the least. I mean,
right. It's
hilarious to write this now, right, on the eve of when Donald Trump is basically making it impossible to be in higher education or research and be Chinese. So I'm sure that is not going to have a redounding ripple effects for future administrations, as we, you know, maybe try to tell them that we don't think they're all spies and should be killed, right? But
yeah, there
well,
are
good
some,
luck, you know?
There are a lot of comparisons to China, specifically through, like, the high speed rail. There's a line in it where America invents things, China builds them.
I wonder how they do that.
Yeah,
it might be a ideological single party a state, but, you know, I could be wrong here. Yeah, I mean, that is, I think, the looming kind of shadow behind all of this kind of liberal talk is, like, look, China's doing it, right? Like, yeah. Regardless of, you know, how oppressive they are, or we want democracy or whatever, you can now look to a functional model of a bunch of shit that you want, right? And you in that world, you can't make excuses, right? You can't say, well, you're just a utopian. It's like, no, it's over there. It's right across the Pacific. I'm fucking looking at it on Xiaohongshu.
Xiaohongshu.
I'm not looking at Xiaohongshu, y'all. I gave up on Mandarin.
Did you see TikTok? They're going to release a new U.S. version of TikTok. So they're not banning it. They're just making a completely, quote unquote, we'll wait and see, a divested version, a spinoff that is just, like, Americanized. But I have yet to find any details. I'm like, OK, but who owns it?
Yeah, the part of Xiaohongshu that I really enjoyed is, I really wish, I mean, with all of this, like, auto translation, all this, we could just be living, our feeds could be filled with Chinese guys that are basically doing the same goofy shit that we are. And we could have this, like, cross-cultural pollination. And I think it would be better for the world. And, like, that succeeded for, like, just a moment on, like, Xiaohongshu. But I don't know if anybody in Silicon Valley is actually interested in doing that.
I wonder if there's a Chinese version of our podcast. It's like, is this propaganda? No, there's no such thing.
No. yeah. I mean, I think guys like, to me, I mean, rest in piece, you know, because he used to be quite the poster and now he's kind of less of one. But Carl Zha back in the day made it abundantly clear to me that Chinese people are very, very aware of like their propaganda and also roll their eyes at the state. Right? They're just like, oh, brother, these guys suck at this.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Okay, do we have anything else we want to say about abundance? We have a couple of things that we wanted to talk about.
I think we're good on that. More to come on abundance as I find more funny shit to fucking laugh at Connor about.
Yeah, I mean,
laugh with Connor about. Connor didn't write it.
Read it if you want. Your life won't change if you read it or not.
Email us for a large discount on abundance.
Join the discard. Join the discard for a large.
Join the discard.
Yeah. Yarr, join our discard.
Join the propagandos pirate discard for non-pirated copies of Abundance.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to some actual propaganda that you and I had a little bit of a debate about.
A spat.
A spat.
Fuck you, Connor.
Do you want to lead into this one?
Yeah. So, I think people that listen to this podcast are going to be aware that we've already referenced Zoran Mamdani, right? Like won the Democratic primary for the mayoral race in New York, and that
more
this
votes than any New York City primary ever.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
And I mean,
wow.
As a horrendous authoritarian Marxist, I can tell you that the victory of DSA falls heavily on my shoulders. I don't like to see it. I might cut that.
No, leave it in. Why not?
This has spawned many, many reactions in different parts of politics, and least of which being the New York Times, right, that over the weekend did what I think we can both, Connor, agree is like, where the headline is just like clearly a smear. The smear being that, like, we know now that from a hack of Colombia's admissions data that Zoran Mamdani checked the boxes for both Asian and African-American on his admission papers to a college, by the way, that he did not get into. And that this is supposed to... Yeah, I imagine... that his dad worked. Yeah, seriously. So... which doesn't speak well for him as a student. That's really funny. His dad worked there and he didn't get in.
Yeah.
So brutal. And like, I think the thing that they're trying to do here is like make black people angry, I guess, or like get black voters, get like white people to be angry on black people's behalf. Right. Because you can't be, you know, Indian or whatever. And African and American, three things that Zoran Mamdani is.
Yeah. If Kamala couldn't pull it off, what makes you think you can, Zoran?
Yeah. And then the other thing everybody was, you know, talking about, and I think like reasonably angry at, is that the person that they're citing that's released this data, right, this allegedly hacked data, is a fucking race science guy, right? Like a white nationalist race science guy. And like, Kremieux, this dude, I literally don't remember his name, but they like when they withheld his name and it was, you know, a very cringeworthy, right? He asked for anonymity, which, you know, fuck him, or you don't have to credit him at all. And by the way, I should say that, like, I don't necessarily believe the hacking thing. I actually think that this admission stuff was like leaked. I think this is like a Columbia, somebody internal to Columbia. basically trying to showcase to right wing people that they are under the table continuing to do some kind of filtering of admissions by race, although the Supreme Court has technically made it illegal.
That or
told you so.
That or like, look at how Columbia has treated people who are like pro-Palestine in the past.
Oh,
They could have just like given it to the dude. Who fucking
If not for just naming names for like Palestinian protesters, I think somebody at Columbia is angry that they're basically under the table doing some form of unnamed affirmative action or like diversity admission, or right, like have invented some other name. But anyway, and Connor again rightly took it up that like I glanced through the article at best, right? Like I read the first two paragraphs and then closed the tab. And it is true that is not reading the article. And the article did in a little bit greater detail elucidate the fact that our race science white nationalist has controversial views and has been doing some research on race.
Right? Yeah.
I guess it speaks to the headline problem that everybody has, right? Including me. where, like, if it's something I disagree with, I'm definitely not reading past the headline. And for a lot of people, they never read past the headline. And, like,
yeah,
it's not substantially better to do what I'm doing, right?
Well, it's interesting because you raised a really valid point that I did not give you your flowers at the time that you said it, because I was mad. But now I will give you your flowers, Alec. You did point out that, like, the article is not really what's important. It's the reaction. It's like what's being generated after they read the headline, what's being generated after they read like a couple of paragraphs and are talking about it. And by then, the conversation has become about something that's not either in the article, presented by the article. And it's not necessarily just this article. It's everything. It's every single article.
I have to say that the New York Times is cognizant of this, right?
Oh,
I think,
yeah.
Right? They know this. And by the way, right, we know that the reporters of the New York Times don't control the headlines famously and have their, you know, headlines basically. I don't know if this is like a word, but like clickbaitized, you know, like turned into
clickbaitized. We'll coin it here.
Oh, damn. That's actually better pronunciation than what I had. Like, yeah, like turned into these, you know, possibly more viral headlines, right? For content's sake. Nobody's clicking on this shit, right? But they're sharing the links and I don't know, maybe they get some money for that. And also, right, that even at places like the New York Times, reporters also don't control what they're writing about, right? So if somebody tells them, hey, you're covering a race scientist talks about Zoran Mamdani's admission application, you know, 15 fucking years ago or whatever, right? Like, you're screwed, right, as a reporter. But I think I'm not trying to just defend the point, right? Like, I actually do think that it's true that we live in a reality now more than ever where that is like the crime to me, right? Like the New York Times putting out the clickbait title that starts the start the conversation about this absolute bullshit smear drivel, right? Like they know what they're fucking doing.
Yeah.
And fuck the New York Times for that, right? Like fuck these guys.
I will agree with you that the editors,
there you go.
Yeah, fuck the editors, fuck the people that wrote this headline, fuck the people that like centered the first two paragraphs and like kind of buried a lot of other stuff. But I will, as a former reporter myself, I have to give a shout out to the people who wrote the article, because Eric Adams gets one line of saying like, this is offensive. And Mamdani gets like the entire article to explain, like, I did this because the American census forms are fucked. And like, how can you expect a melting pot like America to feel represented by this form that tries to put us in like five or six boxes? Like, I know people that are Mexican that have to be white. I know people that are Arab that have to list themselves as white. And like, yeah, so of course I feel for Mamdani in this situation. And I think that the reporters made their best effort to showcase that information. But you had to read all of the article to get to that. And let's also acknowledge it's buried and it's also behind a fucking paywall. And what's not behind a paywall is the person
this podcast.
Yeah, that's right. It's the person who was going to publish this article and got scooped by the New York Times, Christopher Rufo, dipshit and conspiracy theorist.
I mean, yeah, praise the New York Times at least for not giving this one to fucking Rufo. I don't know. I wonder how they fucking scooped him, but I don't know. It's not for me to know. By the way, I'm in our messages to look for like stuff that we've talked about, and I keep scrolling past that guy in his stupid bow tie. it's just like every time I scroll past, he's like he zooms past in his little bow tie.
We gotta bleep so that guy's funny. Name he's kind of connected to me.
It's so funny, man.
It's just like some toxic stuff in my blood of just like there are certain people in this world I see him and I'm like I just want to beat on them.
I hate you.
So we'll bleep the name, but we could also talk about the other toxic thing I did this week if we have anything else to add to the Zoran thing.
It's so awesome. No, I'm good.
Okay.
You've got to.
All right, so story time for me, listeners. So I saw that Gavin Newsom threatened to gerrymander California to combat or offset Trump's desire to have Texas redraw their districts to further gerrymander it to boost conservative politicians. I am against this for two reasons. One, every statewide politician in California is already a Democrat. It's a massively Democratic state. What the fuck are you doing? What do you hope to gain by this? That's such a stupid thing to waste your time on. And two, I'm against gerrymandering. Full stop. I do not believe that the key to saving democracy is disenfranchising voters. I also think that, like, if you think that Gavin Newsom will relinquish that power once Trump is gone, I got a bridge to sell you. I got a book to sell you called Original Sin by Jake Tapper about Joe Biden, backing down on his promise to be a transitionary president. Like, we know from history and human experience that, like, power is not voluntarily given up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see if
shocker.
Let's see if Trump leaves the White House in 2028. He definitely didn't want to leave in 2020. So I post the first comment on the Texas Tribune's article about this on Instagram. It's just like, gerrymandering is wrong no matter how you slice it, which I also thought was a rather clever joke on my end.
Connor's like, ooh, time to get in my comment.
Yeah. And the comment, like, I get lots of likes, but also tons of comments that are just like, you're wrong. Like, that's not what we should do. And everybody's arguing with me, and I'm doing my best to, like, keep it really professional, because that's the other thing. It's like, once you resort to personal attacks online, like, nobody's paying attention to anything, right? And so I'm just, like, trying to make it very concise in all my replies of, hey, look at how we suspended a primary in this past election. Isn't that kind of fucked? Look at how Biden said he was only going to be a one-term president and he didn't do that. Like, isn't that kind of fucked? And someone said, all right, what's your plan then? And I wrote a pretty, I think, good response of, like, look, the Democratic Party needs to offer a better solution. If you look at David Hogg getting ousted as the DNC vice chair, if you look at Zoran Mondani, who's, like, struggling to get endorsements from the Democratic establishment right now, mm-hmm. you'll see that the Democrats don't really fucking care about what the voters want. They care more about what the donors want. And so I said all this, no curse words, very laid out. And this guy was like, great lecture. You can exit the party now. And I was like, oh, I'm going to find out where your kids go to school. Like, yep, there's longitude, latitude, coordinates of your kid's daycare. I'm going to fucking kill you.
Connor just goes absolutely ballistic.
I just got, like, so fucking mad. It's like, thanks. You can leave the party now. It's like, you piece of shit.
Yeah. Which, by the way, listener, like, I'm not judging Connor for this. I have been very much guilty of kind of doing the same thing in
the
years
things
past.
You say, right? Like, online, we can't put into podcast.
Yeah, well, that's true. But two, like, people are, let's just say that you, listener, may be in this group as well. People are not aware of how easy it is to find them on Google, right? And you can use this secret power for extreme evil if people piss you off on the internet. And this is not good behavior. But it is, to me at least, very understandable. And Connor, like, falling to it, like, Connor, you know, we should read the article. I'm a fucking journalist. You're just posting, right? Like, the fact that he fell to it is delicious. It's so funny.
It happens
to all of us, man.
I had to, like, I did type something out and I had to delete it. Because, like, what am I doing? What the fuck am I doing?
The rage just sees red.
I'm glad that it's over. It's now no longer in the algorithm, but every now and then I'll get someone commenting on it being like, that's not a good idea. Oh, should we follow the rules even though Republicans aren't following the rules? I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe. I appreciate that you took a deep breath and you hit the delete button and you didn't post whatever it was that you were going to post, okay? Because I've been in those moments and I've hit enter on that shit. Those fucking tweets got sent, dude.
Yeah, no, I found out this guy is a vet and I was like, how many civilians have you killed, dude? Like, like, that was what I wrote out. And I was like, no. I cannot post this.
Woo!
I cannot post this.
That's really funny.
So anyway, hey, thank you to our vets. You're doing
a great job out there, guys.
Why are you in Somalia? Answer me that.
Why are you in LA?
Oh boy.
So Yeah, I was gonna wrap up the Zoran thing. It's funny that we came all the way back, because like the moral of that story is I think like a poster and Connor actually thinks like a journalist, which is very, I'm like, the only thing that matters is what people are posting about. And Connor's like, you have to read what they wrote. And I'm like, no, you don't.
No,
it does not matter. And all that matters is how it's metabolized,
it's kind of like, it made me think of like, we're all capable of good and evil. We are not good. We are not evil. It's just like things that we do. But we're all capable of being a poster. And yeah, in that moment, I realized like, oh, I'm becoming a poster right now. I gotta like stop for a second.
You were almost corrupted. You almost fell to like the demon of posting.
Dude,
the gin of posting was on your shoulder. Dude.
That picture that we were talking about, the guy in the bow tie.
Oh, yes.
I almost commented on it. And I'm like, I like kind of sort of work with this dude sometimes. I can't.
Oh,
do
man.
Anyway.
Oh, we can bleep that if we have to. Oh, so the other thing, you mentioned AI before when we were talking about Ezra Klein. So I don't know if you've noticed, and we might move this to just the beginning of the episode, but we are recording on the eve of yet another bizarre conversion of the Twitter AI Grok. This time to absolute Hitler praising Nazism. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, yeah. The whole like, and that last, what was it? It's like that last name. It's always that last name or something like that.
Oh yeah, we're just trying it out. The Heil Hedgehog guys, and they're like, don't you mean a different guy? And it's just like Heil Hitler. It's like holy fuck. Oh no.
I don't know if they did an overcorrection with Grok. I don't know if it's like, okay. So I had a theory. Because I saw Grok post something about divorce and how like divorce saves you from humiliation. I was like, what the hell? And then and just like somebody deleted there was like a deleted Grok comment about like Ghislaine. It's like, I only met Ghislaine once in a photobomb. And they're like, why is Grok saying this? So here's my theory.
But it sounded like it was speaking from Elon Musk in the first person or something. Very bizarre.
If Elon's not the one typing out Grok stuff, I think Grok is also Elon's experiment into like basically turning his consciousness into a digital thing.
It must be like learning from a blog or something. I mean, I don't know, because it does this every once in a while, like the South Africa. If people aren't on Twitter much, Grok, this like AI that's built into Twitter now, like manifested all of a sudden. It just started talking out of nowhere when people were like, hey, summarize this news article for me. And it would just start talking about like white genocide in South Africa, which is just like this crank white nationalist theory. So it's like done this before. And then, you know, now it's doing Hitler stuff. But the shit is like way too specific. It's like it literally is like digesting a bunch of like insane right-wing blogs or something, like, and then just getting stuck on that for the day. Is very bizarre. And by the way, nobody knows why it's doing this, right? Because Twitter is not commenting.
Yeah, we should use that Never Met a Nice South African song.
Never met a nice South African. That's not bloody surprising, man.
Now he's never met a nice South African. It's not bloody surprising, man,
because we're a bunch of... So Connor, you've brought a show and tell item for us.
I did bring a show and tell item. Listeners, as you may or may not know by this point, I do some research on like conservative children's media. So like I'm watching that libertarian cartoon show, The Tuttle Twins. I've read the books. I've read all the books. I've also like I babysit for a friend and I see they're like left-wing books about like baby's first protest or like, you know, we're stronger together. And meanwhile, I'm like you, Alec, where I'm like, let's just watch Bluey. Bluey's just like,
I'm playing hide and seek with my daddy. Like,
what? By the way, you've told me that right-wingers don't like Bluey, and I'm like, what the fuck is their problem, man? It's like the most tepid kind of, you know, like very middle of the line. It's just about babies and what babies do. Like,
yeah. Well, I stumbled across a very far right wing children's book called It's Okay, and okay is crossed out, and says it's really fun to be white.
No, Jesus.
There you go. And
this is by author Stu Peters. So, listener, I mean, you don't have to look up Stu Peters, but it's exactly what you're thinking it is.
Right? Yeah. I mean, this guy, let's see here. I'll read the about the author because it kind of made my jaw drop that this is in a kid's book. Dubbed a conspiracy kingpin by Rolling Stone and the next Alex Jones by the BBC, Stu Peters is a syndicated news personality, documentary filmmaker, public speaker, prolific noticer, an Overton window shifter. Originally a bounty hunter from Minnesota, Peters built an influential media empire and social media network during the fake pandemic by warning against the COVID-19 big weapon jab that had been masquerading as safe and effective vaccines. Stu Peters is well... Here we go. Stu Peters is well regarded as the linchpin that made discussing the, quote, Jewish question mainstream, even being labeled as the guy... even being labeled as the guy who radicalized Candace Owens. His documentary, Occupied, gained millions of views in its first week after being released. He is also the well-known host of The Stu Peters Show, where he regularly interviews prominent public officials and influencers about the uncomfortable topics that nobody else will cover.
I mean, just starting your thing off with Nazi propaganda is pretty sick.
Just like praising yourself for being like, look, wild. Man, thanks to me, people can now like talk about the Jewish question without being afraid of getting canceled. All right, you ready, bud?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Long before you were born, God put together a unique recipe just for you. He included many ingredients that would make you special. And just like putting a gift into a box, he put all of those distinct traits into you. Then he wrapped it all up with a beautiful colored skin called white. How fun is that?
Okay.
Big old white box. You were brought to life with the gifts and skin God gave you. Those special traits formed the person you are today. And your birth was so joyous that even the angels danced in heaven. That's so fun to think about.
Don't forget, God wanted you to be white. You specifically.
Oh, yeah. Bunch of white kids standing on the globe holding hands.
If God wants people to be white, then why does he make people black?
You should read the Book of Mormon. They can tell you all about that. Okay.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So the meanie meaningtons try to make you feel your skin color is inferior, but that couldn't be farther from the truth. The color of your skin is a unique gift that God gave to you.
Kids do not know what the word inferior means. I'm sorry. Like babies do not know what that means.
Your skin color is shared by many in the world. They share some of the same God-given ingredients as you. That is one reason we feel a sense of belonging when we play or interact with people who have the same skin tone.
Oh, God.
Our shared skin tone makes up our culture, history, customs, and traditions. Being part of a culture and tradition is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of AI artwork. Oh, yep. There's a hallucination right there. We were debating, listener, whether or not this was AI. This is definitely AI artwork. Oh, no.
There's got to be like a big nose Jew in the thing, right?
Nope. Just a big old brown kid yelling at a white kid. And that is a meanie.
Classic.
Sadly, the world has some angry people. These people are called the meanie meaningtons. No matter where we go, some of the meanie meaningtons criticize the skin God gave you. They say white isn't a color. White is nothing. That's not fun at all, is it?
They're doing the angry, like, angry black man trope, but it's the angry black child, like, trope. Like, that's crazy.
Jesus Christ.
It's not good.
Throughout history, many people who share the same skin tone as yours have accomplished great things. Ask your parents to teach you about people who have the same culture and traditions as you, because it is fun to discover how your identity fits into the world.
Ask your parents about other white people.
Okay, here are some other races that look happy, although they all kind of seem cross-eyed.
Well, that might be the AI's fault.
There are different parts of the world where having white skin is not very common, but maybe that's what makes you special. The color of your skin came from your mother and your father and a special recipe that God created just for you.
The baby sauce, white baby sauce.
Being unique makes life super fun. You can see the girl with the bindies cross-eyed.
That's surprisingly multicultural for that slide.
Being good friends with someone takes time and commitment. When skin color becomes a problem, it makes friendships harder. This stands in the way of
These are children. They don't care, man.
This stands in the way of the children reading this do.
Oh, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm sure their parents are really baking it into them.
That is what's funny is like when you have, by the way, like I've got a like a young child and we go to daycare and there's like there are plenty of different races there, right? And like it's clear that the babies don't give a fuck, right? Like they immediately recognize like another child and they want to like play and like fight over toys and like drool on each other, right? And shit, it's like there just is no difference to them. Like I know that that's like a trite point that like whatever, kids don't see race or whatever that is, but it is like when you behold it and it's your own kid, you're like, oh, there really is no, like, they have no animus, right? They're just like very, very pure.
Yeah, it's all constructed stuff that's put upon us as we grow older.
Right.
From our fucking parents.
Yeah.
When it stands in the way of a friendship between us. It's never fun when someone is critical of our white skin. That's true. Rahul Rao, former guest on the podcast, is is quite critical of my milky white skin. It can be difficult to understand the lives of those unlike ourselves. And so the meanie meaningtons can often find fault in our skin tone. What? Hey, what?
I
never let anyone's criticism.
So good.
It's just like it can be difficult to understand the lives of those unlike ourselves. That's true. That's a really good point. And it's like, and that's why people are racist against us.
Yeah. And what's the problem with the white people anyway? they hate our skin tone. It's like, I don't think that's what they're mad about, man.
Yeah.
It, brother. You might be missing the point on purpose, or we're telling kids on purpose that that is the point. They just don't like it that we are white.
Let's consider all the fun. Oh my God. Let's consider all the fun items in the world that are white.
Like milk.
We've got golf balls, paper,
multiple dairy products,
vanilla ice cream, baseballs, and best of all, whipped cream.
Oh, so it's all dairy products. Yeah, I mean, they are naturally white, I suppose. What? Why didn't he put like aluminum oxide, like fucking
white phosphorus,
cocaine? Yeah, white phosphorus. Oh no.
There are white animals like sheep and seagulls, dogs and doves, and polar bears. Polar bears aren't white. Isn't that just like their hair is not white?
They're like
just
see-through like or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking idiot. That's the dumbest thing in this book so far.
Dumb motherfucker.
Every day we eat yummy white foods such as milk, coconut, bread, flour, sugar.
Motherfucker, you're white. You're not eating coconut every day. What do you think? You're Filipino? Shut the fuck up. You're
and
not
everyone's
eating coconut every day.
And everyone's favorite, marshmallows. What?
So sugar. Yeah, it's like all these things that are killing Americans. Like, you love sugar, don't you, child? That's like our skin.
Don't you like candy? Candy's made of white things.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Oof.
Nature contains white things like dandelions, salt, frost, foamy seawater, snow, ice, and clouds.
He has to say foamy seawater because the water is blue, you fuck. Oh, man.
Let's not forget about concrete, marble, feathers, sand. Sand's not white. Cotton
not
and
white.
Lace, which are what? Lace.
Lace is, I presume he means like doilies, but that's made out of thread. It's the same as cotton. It literally is. Fuck all these guys are such fucking what? It's probably written by AI. I have to imagine it's actually written by AI as well.
It could be. Just like any other color, white is a color. Isn't technically white the absence of color? Isn't that?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, okay. Or it's all the colors, depending on if you're doing a positive wavelength coalescence or like color theory. Yeah.
Well, the white you see on your TV screen is a mix of red, green, and blue light.
That is true, yes.
The color white may appear to be absent of a particular color. Surprisingly, it's a unique blend of all colors. Wow. Now that's the fun.
This is written by AI, 100%. That these like factoids are just like AI.
Did you know that sunlight is really white? Descending from heaven, it scatters in the air and finally turns Ooh. Yellow. Yellow? What?
I'm in pain. Okay.
When you go to sleep at night, you might listen to a machine that makes white noise. Like white light, it's called that because it combines all sound pitches. Sun and sleep and noise. That's white. How fun.
I don't know. Wait, I don't know if the Nazi bros are going to be delighted to hear that whiteness is a mixture of all the colors. That white people are actually all of the other colors mixed up. Because I think they're very particular that they are not mixed with any of the other colors. Like this metaphor is not pleasing to them.
No. Being proud because you are a particular color doesn't mean that you don't like other colors. You must be comfortable in your skin and use the gifts that God put into you.
Uh-huh.
Because it is so much fun to open gifts.
What's the gift?
Whiteness.
Just being white?
Yeah, I mean, here's the photo. There's a bunch of non-white gifts and then this white one with a little...
We're going to open them up and get what's inside and sell it on the market.
Every day, you will wake up with the skin that God gave you. And it's who you are. So why not enjoy it? That's Zen fascism right there, baby.
Yeah, really. Like, unless you get burned by like an IED... And then you wake up with the red skin that you now have forever. That God also gave you, but it was a different God.
Let's hope your wife won't leave you. Sometimes we want to be like everyone else, but you are exactly who you were meant to be. Be proud of who you are. Enjoy the color of your skin. Love yourself even more than you love ice cream, swimming, and flying kites. You're remarkable more than you know. You were made with very special ingredients, and people of your skin tone should celebrate who they are. Throw a party, jump up and down, because it is really fun to be white. The
Fantastic.
End.
Fantastic.
And then there's a page called Let's Ask Grandma. Some of the greatest wisdom about your heritage.
God, let's not. Yeah.
Some of the greatest wisdom about your heritage comes from the people who have lived before you were born, like your grandparents. For a fun activity, ask your grandma these questions. What country did our family come from? What three things are important about our culture? What is your favorite family tradition? When you were young, were there meanings? They'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah,
the government got them forced bust into our school.
Oof, here's this one's Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, ask your grandma about desegregation. Let's see what she says.
Yeah. Question 5. How did your hair become white? What makes you proud of who you are? What special ingredients do you see in me? Then perhaps you and your grandma can have a party celebrating the fun things you've learned about your culture. And that's it, man. So I'll send this to your kid.
No.
All right.
He'll love it.
All right. Well, I'll send him the baby book I got about Yacoub and how whiteness was
that
really
created. That would rule. That would absolutely rule. They made an AI Yacoub thing, and it's like, you were created by an evil sorcerer.
That's a trade-off, man. Like, this book teaches you, like, you know what? I'm actually proud to be white, whereas my baby book about Yacoub is like, don't hate me because I'm white. It's just the way Yacoub made me.
I really, dude, that would be sick if I didn't do the like lazy AI route. I got like into watercolors and I actually learned to do like children's illustrations. And I made the insane like Yacoubian children book about how like white children are like products of evil science.
I have a comic made by a French illustrator about Yacoub. Let me grab it.
I'm ready to Google, brother. Let me know what
it's
called.
Here you go. Yeah, the art is amazing.
Oh, I have. Yeah, I think you have shown me this. I've never read it all the way through.
Yeah.
His head is enormous.
Yeah, man. And he was seen as such a freak that he his feelings got hurt so bad that he bred blackness out of humanity and created evil whites because they had
Listener,
no melanin.
We are talking about the book Yacoub, The Father of the White Devil Race, which you may buy on Amazon.
Yep.
$6.99 in stock.
May Allah bless you and protect you from the wickedness of Yacoub's cursed children.
Every time the dude said, what did he say? Like, you're made of special ingredients. All I thought of was those matching t-shirts you can get that's like, I'm the baby. He put the baby batter in me. And the other one is like, I made the batter. Those insane fucking like I'm pregnant shirts. Oh, my God. Let me find them.
So gross. What's the most disgusting one I've seen lately is 4 inches went in, 9 inches came out. Jesus Christ. Why would you say that?
The famous one that said just like I'm the cum man.
I'm
or whatever.
The cum man.
Oh my God. Amazing.
Oh man.
No, it's I'm stuffed with a little turkey, and the dude's one says, I made the stuffing, which is crazy, man.
That's so gross.
Who does this?
Depraved people. All right. Do we have anything else that we want to touch upon before we wrap up for tonight?
Fuck, I'm trying to think. I actually feel like kind of depressed after the white baby book. I really don't like it. The Nazi baby book.
Yeah, I mean, this is just this is the research that I chose to go down, like weird conservative or rather like weirdly politicized children's content, which like to what you said, like they're kids. They don't yeah. know these words. Like the book that I talked about, the left wing book, it talked about like segregation. I'm like, a kid doesn't know.
They're a little older, man.
But, you know, my partner made a really good point. It's like you buy these for kids and they just read them over and over and over as they grow up. And it's like baked into their brain that they get older. And so like it does instill values. It does instill principles in them, which is good in that case. It's deplorable in this case. It's yeah. really fun to be white. Maybe I'll give this to Raul. I'm like, hey, bud, just so you know, this is what you pushed me to.
Which is the book I read over and over and over again is like one of the Peter Cottontail ones about like he goes into the neighbor's yard and steals like vegetables and then he gets away with it. He gets away with it. And I think his mom like puts him to bed with tea. And I'm like, see, this is what happens to naughty boys. They barely escape death and then they have to go to bed with shitty tea.
You got to do a Peter NIMBY tale where he gets like shot by the castle doctrine. Advocate, Peter, I guess.
Peter NIMBY tale where he doesn't want to do deregulation and he ends up homeless.
Yeah, I really want to see a kid's book about a sovereign citizen.
He gets priced out of San Francisco.
he's trying to like steal carrots in a farm, and you see in the background it's got like, in this farm we believe love is love, science is real.
Yeah. And it's still just it's Mr. McGregor. He's like still got the rake out and he's about to kill him.
No, he's got the rake in one hand, he's on the phone with the police in the other.
Yeah, perfect. It's by the way, right, like the thing we forgot to touch on is like Ezra Klein's like utter hatred for progressives. He does it so many times where he's like, these so-called progressives in San Francisco that will tell you that they love everyone and then they just step over homeless people. And it's like, yeah, they're rich, dumb fuck. They own homes.
Yeah. I would love to see a version of this book if Ezra actually spent time genuinely engaging with progressives.
Yeah, it's like social progressivism is not the same thing as economic progressivism. Sorry,
that is true.
There's a ton of billionaires that are very happy that you're, you know, gay and able to express it on the street, but don't want to be taxed at all, right?
Yeah. And they don't want to have to pay for any social services that you might need as a marginalized person.
Oh, yeah. They would be happy if you just didn't have a school, right? They're just like, oh, that sounds like your fucking problem, dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I've got nothing else. I do want to say one thing. You know, I am here in Texas, and listeners, you may have heard by now that there has been horrendous flooding in Central Texas over the past July 4th weekend. It came out of nowhere. People are pointing fingers on who to blame. Kristi Noem and Greg Abbott are passing the buck left and right. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors right now. But what we do know is that 161 people are missing. The death toll is 109. And there are resources out there that can help. Texas Search and Rescue is a really big one. There are some funds out in Kerrville, Texas right now that are trying to get meals to people that need it, that are trying to get resources to people that need it. We will be sharing stuff in the episode description about where you can donate or send items to if you so choose, if you are able. Look, I the one thing I know about Texas is that we have grown accustomed to not relying on the government, be it federal or state, to come in and swoop in to save us when we need it. We do heavily rely on each other. And so far it works. I mean, Houston has survived many a hurricane before, thanks to our neighbors. And I do believe that Kerrville, the survivors of this flood can pull through with your help. So please, 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 if you have the ability, if you have it in your heart to donate and contribute, we ask that you do so. Thank you.
Well, I guess, Connor, I guess if we're done with the episode, I've got to go learn about mid 20th century history from Grok. So I'll be offline for a couple hours while I do that.
Yeah, ask Grok if they have any good songs about South Africans they can recommend.
Because I've never met a nice South African. That's not bloody really surprising, man. hell yeah, brother.
All right. Well, as always, Excelsior Propagandos, and keep your eyes on the skies.
Bye.
I've traveled this whole world of Oz from Barnsley to Peru. I've had sunstroke in the Arctic and a swim in Timbuktu. I've seen unicorns in Burma and a yeti in Nepal. And I've danced with temple pygmies in a Montezuma hall. I've met the king of China and the working Yorkshire miner. But I've never met a nice South African.
No, he's never met a nice South African. And it's not bloody surprising, man.